Now, the Carolingians had come into contact with Anglo-Saxons, for example, the great missionary Boniface, early in the 8th century, in the time of Charles Martel, in the time of Pippin III. By the time Charlemagne came to the throne, he was able to attract to his court a man by the name of Alcuin. Alcuin was born about 735. He died in 804. Alcuin was perhaps the greatest contemporary product of the Northumbrian, that is to say, the Northern English school tradition, which went back to Bede. We talked about Bede in an earlier lecture, the great scholar from the monastery of Wearmouth and the monasteries of Wearmouth and Jarrow in the north of England. Now, Alcuin became a trusted friend of Charlemagne. He became a trusted advisor of Charlemagne. We might think of him as sort of the secretary of education for the Carolingian establishment. Now, please, he bore no such title, but we might think of him in something like that capacity. He was clearly the advisor on matters of education. Much of the school reform of the Carolingian period is almost certainly attributable to Alcuin, at least by design. Key thing, of course, is that Charlemagne spotted him, recognized his talent, brought him in, and then gave him the opportunity to do what he wished to do. Now, Alcuin himself prepared, for example, theological works. He prepared biblical commentaries. He was a poet, not a great poet, but a competent poet, and he wrote a considerable number of letters, more than 300 of which survive. His works have sometimes been dismissed by scholars who've looked at them, and they say, well, he's not very original, he's rather derivative, he's rather elementary, there isn't much here that's really terribly sophisticated. Well, that's true in a way, but it's also true, and very important to say, that Alcuin was a teacher. He was working to build foundations. He was working, in a sense, to create a kind of a base for greater work that would be done in later times. This was not a time for great flights of fancy, for great flights of originality. This was a time to get back to basics, in a sense, or indeed, if not back to basics, to get the basics into place. Alcuin, for example, urged Charlemagne that every monastery and cathedral have a school where even the lay boys could be educated. Charles legislated on schools quite a number of times. Remember, we talked about Charles's capitularies, those documents that were issued in the annual assemblies. Well, on quite a number of occasions, Charles's legislation dealt with schools, the formation of schools. He was very careful, for example, to say that only people who were themselves well-educated should teach in schools, that they should be very careful that the books in those schools were copied very carefully, very accurately. We have to remember, nothing is printed now. Every book is written by hand. If we want some sense of the scale of that kind of activity, it would have taken two competent scribes, two professional scribes, about a year to copy a Bible, for instance, if we want to just have some sense of the scale of activity. Charlemagne also attracted scholars from elsewhere in Europe. Now, they were attracted by his vision. They were impressed by his commitment of resources. Charles could indeed put vast resources at these people's disposal. So, for example, a number of important grammar teachers came from Italy. Italy was, of course, a land very close to the Latin heritage. There were still important schools in various places in Italy, even after they had more or less ceased to exist in Gaul, and obviously in the lands east of the Rhine, which the Carolingians had taken over. There was really no school tradition at all. There was no Roman past there to recover. Something had to be built. So important teachers of grammar were brought from Italy. Specialists in theology and liturgy came from the Spanish borderlands. So Charles managed to sort of gather people to his court from really all over this far-flung realm that he had created. He had no sense that that privileged positions should be reserved for Franks or reserved for his family members or reserved for his cronies. He was really very much open to any person who could come and lend a hand, who could provide some talented service to this court. Now, when the scholars came, they brought books. They brought books with them, and slowly but surely, cultural traditions were built up. They sought out copies of books they already knew about. Many of these scholars, for example, were aware of certain authors, knew that these authors had written books, and we have a considerable number of surviving letters where these scholars would write back and forth to each other. Say, do you have a copy of this book? Do you have a copy of that book? May I borrow this book from you? May I borrow that book from you? These books would then be sent around. They would come in. Copies would be made of them, and slowly but surely, libraries were built up.